Welcome to Shaping E-Commerce with Iron Plane. This is where we talk about e-commerce development, solutions, digital marketing, and all things e-commerce. Be sure to check out the description below each video to find additional resource links and show notes. We upload new videos each day. Please like and subscribe to our channel.
Thanks for joining us for this new episode of Shaping E-Commerce with Iron Plane. Today we're starting off a new series, and it's really about the future of e-commerce. And so I've tried to pull together some experts in the field who I think would be interested in sharing their points of view about e-commerce now and in the future. The goal of this is to present information to merchants who might be struggling to figure out what they should be doing in their digital business operations. Which e-commerce platform should they be considering? What type of architecture? So with these Q&A sessions, hopefully we'll be answering some of those questions. And today we're joined by Isaiah Bollinger from Trellis. Thank you for joining us today, Isaiah. If you could just give a quick intro about your background, that'd be great.
Yeah, like you said, my name's Isaiah, and I'm the founder of Trellis. So we've been around for over 10 years now, doing e-commerce implementations, but really now we're more full service. So we've kind of evolved to be more of a strategic partner for our clients with e-commerce. And we focus at this point now mostly on Shopify, BigCommerce, Magento, and we're doing actually quite a bit with headless, which is kind of like a new buzzword. So those are kind of like the four technologies we spend most of our time on, but we also work with a ton of other tech partners like Soligo is like an integration solution. Yotpo does reviews, Klaviyo for email. So we've gotten pretty full service. So we're dealing with kind of like a pretty wide variety, but it generally centralizes around something like a Shopify or BigCommerce, one of those kind of platforms.
Perfect. So you'll see why when we go through these questions, it's perfect to have you on. You're in a really good position to provide some insights here. The first question is really just pretty broad brushstrokes here. It's, what do you think we're looking at in the next 5 to 10 years for e-commerce? I mean, you mentioned some of the platforms already, you mentioned headless, but
yeah,
you know, in considering kind of merchants who are thinking about their next move, where do you see e-commerce heading in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. In regards to headless, since you mentioned it, I think that the larger companies will move in that direction, or probably the more mature companies. So I think the more mature companies will see the value of headless, gives you more flexibility, allows you to tie in lots of different systems on the back end while having one user experience on the front end. So I don't think headless is quite there for everybody, and I think it's going to take a while. Maybe at some point everybody will go in that direction based on kind of new technology and things like that. But I do think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see quite a few of the larger, more, not necessarily larger, but like either larger or more mature. I make that distinction because sometimes a large company is not mature with e-commerce, so it's actually a bad idea for them to go with headless. But oftentimes they have the budget and the complexity, so it makes sense.
When you say mature, to me, what that means is actually that they're willing to put the resources there. They're willing to invest the financial backing of that e-commerce initiative.
Yeah, or another good example is like they might be a relatively small business. It's like a $20 million business, but they've been doing e-commerce for 10 years. It's like the core of their business. Maybe half their sales are online and it's critical to their business, right? Like that, that's a more mature e-commerce business and sometimes even very large companies, right? So those are the kind of companies I see that will be going to headless. I definitely think more and more will be out of the box. I think we'll be in kind of this weird place where these e-commerce platforms will have to evolve to be almost like more and more order management, and they're already moving in that direction, right? Like Shopify is Shopify Payments. They're going to start taking over more and more of the ecosystem. So I think you're going to see more and more that these platforms will try and handle more and more of the tech stack. That can go good and bad. I mean, we've seen how that goes with like other systems. But I think as people realize how important e-commerce is and they have to put more of their business onto it, they're going to want the platforms to do more things for them and not have like all these disjointed solutions and have to integrate everything, right?
So it sounds like that's like two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. One is you get everything in this Well, I don't even know if it's appropriate to call it monolith when it's SaaS, but basically everything that you need is right there. And then the other end of the spectrum is like you're breaking everything out into the best of breed that you demand and linking those all together. Like those are very different visions.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I think the headless, the best of breed approach makes sense if you're mature and you have the money to build this like sophisticated infrastructure where you can use the best, you know, product information management system to just manage the product data, right? And then, you know, e-commerce almost becomes like somewhat irrelevant at that point from a platform perspective. Like
it's just one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Do you go with order management? Like if you think about it, you could break up all the functions into their own kind of software that maybe is the right system for that company. And then everything rolls up into the headless front end. Or, you know, if you're not really ready for headless, I think you kind of have to go all in on like a Shopify or BigCommerce or Magento and really kind of get as much out of those platforms as possible. And those platforms will continue to do more and more. Like I said, I mean, we saw with Shopify Payments, they just added company account. They added some B2B functionality. Like they're constantly adding functionality, right? BigCommerce added multi-store and, you know, they're adding a bunch of B2B stuff. So I think you'll see more and more stuff, you know, being done in e-commerce as opposed to other systems.
So it you're already touching on this, but the next question was, when you think about these platforms or this architecture of headless composable, do you kind of see one use case or one kind of user group being most served by the Shopify, the BigCommerce? And we can go through, because there are several platforms to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. I think we can start with Shopify. I think Shopify has kind of dominated the B2C retail experience. I think if you have a relatively simple business or you're focused on mostly retail, Shopify is probably a good fit. Where you might struggle is if you have like really complex international, multi-site, multi-brand. But even then, I still think we're seeing quite large businesses, you know, do that on Shopify. Like I think like Allbirds and some of their larger customers are successfully doing it on Shopify. So yeah, I mean, I think if you're direct to consumer and you have like a relatively straightforward business model that's, hey, I sell product to consumers, Shopify is probably the right fit. But obviously there's nuances to that and that's not always the case.
Yep.
I think then you kind of go one level up is like BigCommerce, where if you have more complexity, let's say checkout complexity or, you know, large volume of buy online, pick up in store, which can create checkout complexity, or this complex multi-store because they launched the native multi-store, or B2B functionality, you know, BigCommerce is definitely, I think, kind of the step up in terms of like a little more enterprise, as well as like B2B and just more complex use cases. Yeah. So we're seeing that kind of work in the favor of kind of like we call it like the mid-market, right? Those like more complex mid-market solutions or like, yeah.
And those are both SaaS. So there are some benefits that are shared in that environment where if you want to not have to worry too much about hosting or performance or site security, like there are things that you could do to screw things up as a merchant, but generally speaking, a lot of those things are off your plate and are in the hands of the Shopify's or the BigCommerce teams.
Yeah. I don't want to derail this because I know we have a lot to get to, but I want to go back to that point because there's a lot that I think that's actually a challenge for agencies because in some ways it can be so successful, but then it's like, well, what, why do I need to like pay for it?
Totally.
So let's come back to that because I want to go through other things, but, yeah, I mean, then you kind of have like the Magentos and the Salesforce Commerce Clouds. I think Magento is becoming more of a niche product in that because Shopify and BigCommerce can handle a wider use case, it doesn't really make sense to go with Magento unless you really benefit from this open source, you know, flexible ecosystem. Like you really have to justify that because you're going to have to spend a lot more money on, like you said, hosting, security, patches, updates. Just the overall development overhead is going to be quite a bit higher. Sort of similar with Salesforce Commerce Cloud. I think it's kind of like a SaaS, but it's a little confusing to me. They're like a SaaS, but I know they do some upgrades and I know there's some fairly enterprise costs that come with it. So I think the Adobe Salesforce world, like those are really more enterprise solutions, right? So typically what we're seeing, especially with Salesforce, is like, if you're not willing to spend $500,000 plus, I think I was talking to someone that sold pretty successful agency that focused heavily on Salesforce Commerce Cloud. He told me that their average deal was like $850,000 or $900,000. So like, that's the level of magnitude that you're dealing with. And I think companies need to understand that. Like, I could see companies getting bought into Salesforce and being like, oh yeah, great, we got Salesforce, and not realizing it's like, well, the agencies that do this kind of work are really expensive. And there's a very limited set of agencies that focus on that market, because the people that can afford that market are like massive companies, right? So you have this kind of like limited talent pool in the Salesforce community that drives up the price, as well as the licensing costs and the complexity. It seems fairly expensive from what I've seen. I think Adobe's probably a little bit cheaper. You can probably get away with getting it done definitely for less money. And obviously they have the open source version, so that can be quite a bit cheaper with no license cost, but it's definitely moving more and more up market, especially like the cloud kind of Adobe version that they're focused on.
Yeah. And this is the next area. If you would like to talk about your own impressions of what's going on with Adobe, because, you know, that's one of the areas that we focus on, is working with Magento open source, and Adobe Commerce. We see some of the kind of shift over the past years, where Adobe is moving much more into the enterprise realm. As you said, the smaller players are now eating up a lot of the market because they offer really great solutions.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of like what we're looking at for Adobe Commerce, Adobe Commerce Cloud, and Magento open source?
I think Adobe Commerce Cloud is going to go 100% headless. I think they're going to go down the path of commerce tools, kind of. And because it's not just Adobe Commerce, right? It's like the Adobe stack. Like, they're moving towards this like cloud architecture. And I think the goal that they're going to try and achieve is like, everything's going to be microservices. And then, you know, maybe they have some front end stuff that you can kind of play with, but it's kind of like, you know, use your own React kind of front ends and build everything in the front end headless and just tie in everything with microservices. I'm not sure how that's going to play out long-term. I mean, it's going to be interesting, right? Like, is it going to be like Magento 3? It's like, it almost feels like it's probably going to be like Magento 3 without them calling it Magento 3. It's just going to be Adobe Commerce, and it's going to essentially be headless. And you're going to be like, oh crap, I have to rebuild my front end because I need to be headless.
Yeah.
So I think eventually they're going to kind of force the hand of people to move headless. Especially since I think their front end has not been that great for a long time. It's been probably one of the weakest parts of their platform since Magento 2 and even Magento 1. It's just like, they've never really had a very easy to work with front end.
Page Builder didn't do it for you?
No, yeah. I think headless is ultimately a much, you know, more simple, theoretically simple, like front end for them to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. And where does that leave Magento open source then?
I have no idea. I think there'll be people using it. I mean, there's still people on Magento 1. We just launched a site from someone on Magento 1, you know, a month ago, right? Like, that they finally got off Magento 1. So, I mean, Magento 1 was end of life like years ago, and there's still people on it. I think there'll be people on Magento open source for probably another decade, right? But it'll just, like I said, I think it'll become a smaller community. A lot of that community, I think, will move to Shopify and BigCommerce. Or they'll move to Adobe Commerce and kind of upgrade that way. And then maybe there's the very small handful of folks that somehow can afford Salesforce Commerce Cloud or Commerce Tools. We didn't talk about Commerce Tools, but what I've seen from Commerce Tools is probably a little bit more innovative like than Adobe and Salesforce, but also seems very expensive. And I know they're trying to come down market, but I haven't quite seen anything that resembles down market to me.
So it's really going to be interesting. It feels like there's this space in the middle where you can't necessarily fit into the box of Shopify or BigCommerce, and maybe BigCommerce fills this.
I actually think BigCommerce is going to be the one that fills that gap.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that they're doing the best job in filling that gap. They've got open checkout. They, like I said, they launched multi-store. They bought Quote Ninja and Bundle B2B to like basically bring in more B2B inherently into the platform. They are recently started beta-ing Staging Pro, so like basically like a full staging solution, which is one of the limitations you kind of have with SaaS.
That's
like
totally, yeah, that's great to hear.
So they're moving in that direction. They're doing well with Headless as well. So they have some, like they're definitely doing, I think, all the right things. They certainly still have their cons, just like any platform. They're moving really fast into buy online, pick up in store. So pretty soon you'll have multi-location inventory natively in the platform. You can do it now, but you kind of have to do it like a little bit custom where it'll be pretty much native in the platform, like put in your stores and your you know, scale that up as much as you want. So I think they're going to fill in the middle gaps. I think Shopify is going to go, I mean, they're going up market as well. They certainly, I think, have, like, I think they've kind of like marketed themselves better up market than actually solving for up market solutions. But I mean, they did recently just add company accounts and price lists. I was actually pretty surprised that it like just all of a sudden is like in the software. Like I logged in, I was like, oh, this actually like is here. It's like kind of crazy with SaaS, right? Where you just like log in to like a trial account or like a test store and it's like there instantly, right? And I think between Shopify and BigCommerce, they're going to just eat into a big chunk of that middle market. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned Adobe Commerce. You think that's kind of heading in the SaaS direction. You've got Shopify, BigCommerce. Those are already SaaS. So this term commerce on-prem.
Tool. Is commerce tools SaaS? I guess they're SaaS, right?
I think they are. Yeah. So where does that leave on-prem? Like this concept of like, I mean, nobody's actually doing it physically on their premises. I mean, very few.
Yeah. I mean, I think on-premise still has some value, right? I mean, we still have quite a few Magento clients that are on-prem. I think in the headless world, I actually am very bullish on the on-prem concept of headless. I think if you're going to go headless, you should seriously consider going kind of open source and, like I said, best of breed and actually not having a traditional e-commerce platform. So I think if you go headless, you could have, you know, React front end, whatever, like the modern front end. And then architect out the key systems you have, right? You probably want product management, right? So you're probably going to want a PIM system. You're probably going to want order management. You get some sort of order management system. Maybe that is your ERP system. I don't know. But you have like four or five core systems that do kind of, you know, and then you have CRM, right? Like you have the systems that manage the core master records for like customer accounts, order management, you know, all the traditional things that e-commerce does, product management, like I just mentioned. And then I think you just maybe fill in the gap with like an open source. We actually work with two Node.js packages. One's called Reaction Commerce and then one's called Vendure. It's just a Node.js package, open source, you know, that fills in the gaps. It's a lot lighter weight than like a Magento. And you just fill in the gaps of whatever your kind of like other systems on the back ends maybe aren't best for.
Yeah.
And that fills in maybe cart and checkout and just a couple little things when you really think about it. Maybe it's a promotions engine or something like that. But even that maybe could be run through your ERP or order management. I'm not sure. So yeah, I think that it depends, right? If you go headless, you have to seriously consider the kind of like best in breed architecture, which is very different thought process than like, okay, we're going to try and do like as much as possible in one of these existing e-commerce platforms.
Yeah. And previously you would have all of those systems, but they would be synchronizing with your e-commerce, which also has some of those systems. Like you might have your CRM synchronizing with your customer data in your e-commerce platform. And instead of having two systems, then you have e-commerce doing solely the transactional processing that you need.
Exactly.
And you've got this centralized. So it cuts down a little bit on the redundancy and the need for...
Well, we're already seeing that redundancy is a huge mess with companies. Like I bet you, give me like any mid-market company, and I do this all the time, give me their tech stack and tell me how it all works together. It's a mess. No one's thought through the integrations. There's a lot of redundant systems. Oftentimes, if you actually did the proper integrations and really thought through what everything does, you could probably get rid of 30% of the software.
Yeah.
You know, I've been joking around. I'm like, man, we need to stop being an e-commerce agency and just be like the outsourced CTO, because really, like, these companies need a massive digital overhaul, and they're like, oh, do e-commerce. But it's like, well, what is e-commerce? It's order management. It's ERP. Like, we're already dealing with all their systems anyways.
Right.
Might as well think about how they should all work together in a smarter way. We're doing some of that, but I think there's kind of like this mistrust in the market. I don't know what it is, where they just kind of put us in the box of e-commerce and they don't really trust us to do that. For whatever reason, you know, we're trying to kind of solve that problem. But I think it's right now e-commerce is you're already seeing that problem. I mean, people don't have integrations properly set up, or they're doing a lot of manual processes, or they'll have like a CRM. Like the common problem I'll see especially is like they have Salesforce, right? Or something like Salesforce. Let's use Salesforce, the most like common enterprise CRM, right? Salesforce. They'll have NetSuite, right? Is a common ERP. And then they have like Magento. Let's use that, right? Okay, so what is your master customer record? Like what is the source of truth for customers? Probably should be Salesforce, right?
Right.
But Salesforce doesn't have the order data. So now you have to integrate NetSuite to Salesforce, right? But if you don't integrate Magento down to NetSuite, NetSuite won't have all the orders. So like you have to play this, like that's where Soligo comes in. You have to kind of like architect this and integrate this in a way that like everything has the right information.
And it depends on the immediacy of your needs. Like, yeah. Do you need it to be real time, or can you schedule that, you know, via cron jobs every 3-4 hours?
Great question. Yeah. Can you live with like a day by day, or maybe a, you know, like maybe you're off by a day or something, and you can say, hey, we're going to look at the data from the previous week or something like that, which is theoretically could be okay. Right. But you're right. Sometimes they need real time data, and that gets tricky, right? Because trying to send, when you get into volume and trying to send orders from one system to the other in real time, like, and it's a lot of orders, you can run into bottlenecks. Some of these systems aren't designed to import via APIs, like 100 orders a day, a second, you know, like there's just limitations on some of these APIs, and it's a huge problem for sure. And what I see is people have already bought all these software and no one's actually thought how it's all going to work.
That's very consistent with what we're experiencing as well. And like, on the one hand, it's very
more money, you know.
Yeah,
Tim, all your fault, Tim. Magento is not a, you know, we're down 10%. It's like, well, yeah, we're kind of in a recession, and your systems are a mess, and you only want to pay us to work on Magento. It's like, well, you have underlying fundamental business issues, which is a big part of what we're seeing.
For me, it feels like a great opportunity, but I think the underpinning of what you talk about, which is the agency trust, is so critical. And that, I mean, speaking as an agency, a little bit off topic here, it feels like if you can find that trust and that relationship with a client, there's so much opportunity that a company like Trellis or Ironplane can do to help those businesses.
Yeah.
With all of those systems, like you were talking about, because it's only going to become more integrated over the years. So I like the approach that you're suggesting.
Yeah. And that's where I think things like Soligo, we've had a lot of success with Soligo. You know, I don't want to just like, this isn't a pitch for Soligo, but, you know, we've worked with some of the other iPaaS solutions and we've just had a good partnership with them, and they've been very generous to kind of invest in us and vice versa. And, you know, you kind of need something like that, because otherwise what you do, you custom build everything. It gets kind of expensive. With something like Soligo, it's a SaaS solution that sits in the middle and you can kind of hook everything up to it. But once again, it has some limitations, right? So
right.
There's some downside to using a SaaS solution for anything, right? But I think that going to back to that trust issue, it's been challenging to earn the trust. And I think that part of it is that clients are scared to open up the like doors to all their like stuff and all their problems and maybe let someone into like everything. And then they feel like, oh, now I'm gonna become so reliant on this agency. But by not doing that, they're also kind of shooting themselves in the foot, because we're only being able to solve a third of the problem, which never really solves the underlying core issue sometimes, right?
Yeah. So I wanted to just circle back, and this is kind of a personal goal of mine, is to make sure that people understand when we talk about headless, what that traditionally means and how it's different from composable. Can you talk about that at all?
I kind of disagree with the fact that they're different. I kind of lump it all together. Me, I kind of look at it as like, you're either headless or composable or you're not, right? So the traditional model is your BigCommerce, your WordPress, your Shopify, whatever, and your data lives in there. Your front end is the same tech stack as the data in the platform, right? So your shop, you know, your Shopify front end, you're managing all the code in this one system, right? Whereas once you go headless or composable, your front end is now its own separate thing, right? It's React code that lives. Usually we usually use Vercel for hosting headless. You don't have to, but that's just the one that we kind of started to work with the most. But there's other ones that we've worked with, and we host our own headless website in AWS. So you can really host it anywhere theoretically, right? So now you're basically have an independent front end layer, which is kind of like the user experience layer. And then we look at it as like basically everything is pulled in via GraphQL and APIs. And once you go, whether headless or composable, it could be one system on the back end or it could be 100 systems on the back end. Obviously.
And regardless, it's still pretty fast in terms of user experience.
Not necessarily, actually, because if the GraphQL and API layer is slow, that could pose some issues. So there could be some things that make speed an issue. Just because you're headless, I wouldn't assume that it's automatically going to be fast. That's where I think you still do need to put like engineering thought and manpower into like the architecture of how it's going to be fast. Theoretically, it could be really fast and you might be able to cache some of the data and do certain like fancy things. But if the APIs are slow for whatever reason, that could pose a problem, right? Or you might not be able to use that system. So one of the problems with headless is that a lot of systems are not ready to be headless.
Right.
So a legacy ERP system, if that's where all your data is, you probably can't use it in real time. You're probably gonna have to like extract the data and store it somewhere, almost like a middleware layer, and then make it go headless.
That was kind of my, you know, it seems like right now it's not super clear that it's a comprehensive solution that replaces the monolith. You can see theoretically how you could get there, but those connections, like, you know, you can only have a microservice where there's something that can work with that, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's not real time, how is that improving?
I think our smallest headless project right now is like 300,000. So it's like, that's the level of magnitude that you're talking, right? Like, I think we say internally, if you don't have 200,000 to spend, like at least, then headless is probably not for you.
Yeah.
One interesting solution that we've been exploring is Shogun front end. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah.
I think there's a path there where they're kind of like bundling a lot of the things and you could do some of the front end and kind of, let's say you're just on Shopify and you want to go headless, like, and you kept it pretty simple. That's maybe a path where you could probably get the price down significantly below that price I mentioned, but outside of a solution like that. But then you're also like a SaaS headless solution. So is it really headless? Like kind of headless, but it's SaaS. But if you're going what I consider like the true kind of custom headless route, it's, you know, from our perspective, just based on how we run projects, and, you know, we're not the cheapest option in the world. There's someone else out there that I'm sure can do it cheaper. We're seeing like our cost, like it just, we couldn't justify it for less than $200,000-$300,000.
Yeah.
That includes like some design process and discovery and like a full project process. But, you know, oftentimes it goes way up from there. We had one where it's like, you know, I was actually kind of a little mad at our own team for going so far into the headless route because it was so complicated. They had like, it was like 100 multi-site, right? 100 sites. And I think that ultimately to solve their problems, they need to go headless. But like our ballpark pricing, we knew was going to be over $1 million, right? To do it right. Cause it's like a custom headless solution. And it's one of those things where it's like, you should just tell them that in the first like week. And they're probably like, all right, this, if you're not ready to spend $1 million, like why are we even, let's, we need to go back to the monolithic strategy, you know?
that's always a little bit of a question when you're trying to convince a company like this is a good solution for you to do. And like, but if it's, you know, there's a lot of work to kind of lay the groundwork for them to understand the value of that dollar figure. Like that's the challenge.
100%. I mean, yeah. It's a big company, right? So it's not like crazy for a company that is this big, but not every big company is ready to, but like, you know, it's just part of their company, right? It's not like they're necessarily their business. So maybe they just haven't maybe budgeted for that. And also it could be a year long project to do it well, right? So now you're talking $1 million or over $1 million over a year to do it well. So you're not going to get any ROI until year two or three, which we're happy to be transparent about that, right? But it's like, that's why I always try and be very, like, you know, kind of almost aggressive in the sales process of being like, I think this is going to be hard. This is what I think it's going to be. I could be wrong. If you're not ready for this, like, should we stop talking or go a different route? You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Because most people come to us with these grandiose ideas and it's like, well, how much money do you really have? And can you sustain the cost of this and invest in this over the next 3 years?
And it's also usually just not a one and done. Like, it's not like you're done and you're, you know, the money stops flowing. You got to maintain it. You got to optimize it. You got bugs, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you're not going, like, going back to the Shopify BigCommerce problem that we were talking about with agencies. The one problem we've run into with Shopify and BigCommerce is that if you do it well, and the companies, I'd say complacent, because you do get a lot of complacent companies that just don't necessarily want to improve things that quickly, they can kind of leave it as be, right? You could have a Shopify or BigCommerce site that kind of is stagnant, it self-updates, you have a little bugs here and there. At that point, it's like, well, maybe you just need like a freelancer to fix bugs that come in. Because as an agency, it's like, we don't want to just be on call waiting for like
the bug to come out. Right.
We need some level of consistent work. So to that original point before, it's like, that is actually, and that's where we've been trying, because we see the market moving in that direction and we think it's the right move for most clients, we've been trying to become, you know, more and more full service. And we actually have, it's interesting, we have really strong capabilities in creative and marketing, but we're having a perception issue where like clients don't want to pay us for marketing. Even if I'm like 99% sure I can do it better than their current marketing, they're like, they see us as like developers, or they're scared to like kind of give us the marketing because they, it's like this weird perception issue that has been hard to overcome because we're not the marketing agency by default. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's a challenge. Yeah. That's it. But also the value there is that you probably already know their business better than any marketing agency does.
100%.
Yeah. And you know their technology.
We know their problems. We know the roadmap of like, hey, let's do a little bit of this. It's like, it's all holistic, right? You can't just throw ads at it. Like you know, your ads might need to be coupled with, you know, a promo that is run on the website or maybe some new feature. Right. Like, there's things that can go hand in hand between the design and development and the marketing. We can do all that better than just this siloed marketing agency that doesn't understand the business or the fundamental issues that sometimes are impacted by back office, right? Maybe their shipping's too slow. We need to fix the shipping before we can run more ads, right? So 100%, we can definitely, I think, be a better strategic partner in that way, but it's still been a struggle. We actually are in the process of doing a minor brand refresh to kind of present ourselves a little more full service better. But so we're
chipping away. Certainly the logo, I don't know if you changed the logo, but the trellis concept of those interweaving things, that supports the idea.
We're not changing the logo a whole lot. It's more the colors and the overall feel and tone, because, you know, we've been very development heavy as a business for a long time. And I think sometimes that comes across a little too strong with clients that maybe are leaning more into the other aspects of what we can do.
Yeah.
And one thing I find is that marketing agencies, you know, I'll be honest, I'm going to bash on marketing agencies for a little bit right now. So I think that there's, you know, kind of three kinds of marketing agencies. There's the huge ones, which is a lot of them, or the big ones, or the mid ones that are bought by big ones. Oftentimes they're all owned by, you know, the big guys, right? Like, you know how it goes, right? I'm sure you've friends or friends of friends that got bought up, and it's like they pretend they're like Trellis, but really they're owned by like McCann Erickson or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And,
you know, if you're a mid-sized, smaller customer, you're going to get their C team. Like, you're going to get a guy out of college. Like, we've seen accounts where it's like they haven't even like done anything useful in like 3 months on the AdWords or like the Facebook account, right? It's like, I don't think people realize that, like, unless you're like Coca-Cola,
right,
you're getting some pretty low level service and you're probably paying a lot. So you have those marketing agencies. Then you have kind of the mid-sized ones that I think are still probably doing well. But even then, I think they get in over their head sometimes. And I think that they can be really, really good. But I think sometimes they overpromise. Like we saw one where they came in to do Salesforce Marketing Cloud. The client had bought into Salesforce Marketing Cloud, but it wasn't integrated with anything. And I got on the call with them. Once again, this is a good example of like, we're not the marketing agency because they see us as developers. Got on the call with them and I was like, so, okay, how do you guys plan to integrate? Like, this is like low on the priority list of this client to integrate, right? Like they had so many fundamental issues and the integration was far down on the list. They're like, oh, we'll just install this extension and it'll do everything we need. It's like, not even close. You're talking about two enterprise systems. You can't just install some app built by a guy, you know, overseas and expect it to do all these. They had this like giant list of things they wanted it to integrate and do. And so the client ended up calling me and being like, yeah, you're right. We're paying them a bunch of money and we can't even really get the fundamentals working.
Yeah.
So I think there's some of that going on where these mid-market agencies, they're maybe a little more talented. You probably get some better talent because they're not, you know, bloated like the big guys. But I think they're getting in over their head sometimes by trying to do too much. And then you have the small guys who are kind of hit or miss. You know, they're probably really good at Facebook or really good at Google, but they're really not going to be able to do all the marketing well.
You know, and there's also some opportunities if they've got, even if it's in-house, if they've got some people who are particularly skilled in those areas, there may be a nice synergy between your team that can do both the technical and the digital marketing side of things paired with their support, whether it's a smaller agency or their in-house team. Like that, as long as the conversation is open and they're paying you for services in that realm, like that can often work very well.
I think companies should bring content in-house, right? I think they should bring content creation in-house because it's your brand. You should be controlling the messaging and the
products.
It's your products. It's hard to outsource like the knowledge of your business, right? So it's going to be really hard to have someone create content better than you should be able to do it by building your own infrastructure to create content. So I think companies should build their own in-house kind of media agency, right? And then outsource the expertise of maybe it's, you know, the complexities of managing Google AdWords and Facebook ads, because that can get actually somewhat technical and highly sophisticated from like almost like a data science perspective, right? And you can outsource parts of that, but maybe they're running the messaging of the ads, right? Like that's where, to your point, I think there's this marriage that should be happening. And I think if you try and outsource all of it, you're going to just expect way too much and not get that much back.
Yeah. You know? So we added that whole segment to this conversation that wasn't intended to be there, but it's really important. And I think really worthwhile for people to understand that those interplays are so important that you're investing in these enterprise level systems and you have to make sure that you've got a team who can help you let them talk to each other so that you get the biggest bang for your investment. So that's great. Great points there. So we're going to wrap it up here. And this is really just a question, again, pretty open-ended, about any businesses, technology, platforms that you see either today or down the road that you think are going to have a pretty big impact in the world of e-commerce, whether it's just, you know, pie in the sky company that you know of that's coming or something that you work with day in and day out.
Yeah, great question. Well, I definitely think Figma's already doing that. We saw they just got acquired by Adobe. So I don't know. Although that might, I'm like not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah, so I think Figma's obviously one on the design side. That's a tough question, but a good question. I think Soligo has a lot of room to grow. I think that there's two problems. One, people don't know what they are and that what they can do. And then there's people that buy them and only use it for one little piece. Like they do one integration with it. But really what they should be doing is a more holistic kind of Soligo in the middle, intertwining all your systems. Maybe not all, but the key systems, more the enterprise ones where you need kind of that kind of solution. So I think there's a giant, you know, opportunity in IPaaS and it doesn't have to be Sligo, right? It could be there's Boomi and Jitterbit and there's like all these other ones. I think the iPass market is like still very early stages in terms of like the sophistication, you know.
And how does that play within the headless world then?
So that'll be interesting. It's not 100% clear to me yet, to be honest, because these iPass solutions, they're not entirely designed for headless, but they may move in that direction. So we haven't been using them for headless, but there is something called like Azure API management layer, and I think AWS. So I think you're going to have stuff like that, which may tap into the Sligo type market. So I think you're going to have like, even maybe in the AWS and Azure market, some of this middleware type stuff come out, and that becomes the middleware layer, and they can control the APIs fast enough that it can be headless, or Sligo solves that too. So yeah, I do think that something will happen there, and people will realize like, okay, you have all these systems, but we need to centralize the data somewhere, and that may go to like a data lake, like a Snowflake, or something like that. And then obviously headless is kind of like the unified front end experience, yeah. Right? So I definitely think headless is a very broad technology. I don't think it's one company that will solve headless right now, at least that I've seen. But I do think headless will make a big, you know, difference in e-commerce. But we're also seeing some of the opposite, where some people have gone to headless when they shouldn't have and gone back, because they couldn't handle it, right? It's like, you know, buying a Ferrari when you can only drive like a Toyota, and like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. And then you go to the mechanic with your Ferrari when something, you know, you're hearing some weird sound, and then.
Yeah, they're like, it's 20 grand. You're like, 20 grand to fix this like muffler. Right. I thought it should be like 150 bucks. And it's like, no, you bought the premium product, so you're going to pay premium prices. And they're just like, not ready for that. So, yeah, I mean, you asked a really good question. I do think BigCommerce is a big one. I think, no pun intended, I think that Shopify has dominated, right? I think we can safely say Shopify has like been the most successful e-commerce company, let's say outside of Amazon, right? Like, Amazon, because Amazon's just kind of like Amazon, right? But as like a platform, I think Shopify is the most successful e-commerce platform in the last 10 years, right?
Certainly within the US, yeah.
Yeah, certainly within the US, maybe in other markets it's different. But generally, you know, minus their stock market crash, which I still think they're probably at a good price now. Because
correction. That was just a correction, that's all.
Well, it was like an 80%. I mean, but I think that they've dominated. I think they will continue to dominate. But I think BigCommerce is this really tiny player relative to them that's kind of undervalued in the e-commerce ecosystem because of Adobe and Salesforce and Commerce Tools, the other big players being just so expensive, right? Like, to your point, you know, not everyone that's on Magento can just go on a Shopify. Like, that could be really difficult for a lot of people. But they might be able to go to BigCommerce, right? Or so there's that middle ground there that I think that will expand. And I think BigCommerce is the one that we really feel like is definitely has a strong chance to be one of the bigger players in that space.
Yeah.
There's so many other like cool startups and interesting technologies, but some of them are really small, so it's hard to say, right? Like, I don't know, maybe they'll be the next, you know, big thing, but I just...
Well, we'll certainly keep tabs on what's upcoming new technologies. I agree with you about Figma. That's an interesting one. We'll see where that goes. And Sligo kind of reemphasizes this idea of the importance of the integrations between your systems and the value that you can get out of that. So I think those are good technologies to mention. So just in wrapping up, just if you could give folks a quick shout out to where they can find you and any more information that you'd like to share with them about Trellis.
Yeah, so our website's pretty simple. It's trellis.co.co, so not .com, it's just the word Trellis. .co, and I'm pretty heavily on LinkedIn. You know, you can just search my name, Isaiah Bollinger. Same thing with Twitter. I pretty much try and stay focused on LinkedIn and Twitter. I've actually deleted a lot of my other social media because I found it just not very productive, and I already waste enough time in my life in certain ways. So I figured that was one way to reduce that. So I'm big on LinkedIn and Twitter, and obviously on our website, and definitely reach out. And like I said, I'm happy to be that kind of sounding board as the CTO mindset, and probably can come up with ways for you to reduce 30% of your software. That's awesome. The trend I'm seeing is you look at people's software and you're like, do you really need all this stuff? Probably can cut down on 30%.
Yep. Good. And we'll include some of this information in the show notes also, so people can find it a little bit more easily. But thank you so much for joining us today on Shaping E-commerce. It was a great conversation and hopefully a lot of insights that merchants can leave, and maybe reach out to Trellis or Iron Plane and get some help in their e-commerce adventure. Thanks very much, Isaiah. I appreciate it.
For more insights on how to improve your e-commerce website and for a free consultation, visit ironplane.com. Follow us on social media and like and subscribe below.